Welcome to Enclave on Air. I'm your host today, Jax DiEugenio. In today's episode, supported by Bristol-Myers Squibb, we have the pleasure of speaking with Roxana S. Dronca, MD, about the FDA approval of subcutaneous nivolumab and hyaluronidase for advanced metastatic solid tumors. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Dronca discussed the significance of this FDA approval across multiple solid tumor indications, pivotal findings from the CheckMate 67T trial, and how this approval represents a paradigm shift in modern cancer care delivery. Could you briefly discuss, you know, the real significance about the approval of subcutaneous nivolumab and how it's different than other forms of nivolumab?
The approval of subcutaneous nivolumab really represents a shift, especially for solid tumors, in how cancer treatments are delivered and conceptualized. It really sets the stage, I think, for a broader acceptance of subcutaneous therapies in solid tumors, as is already happening more, I believe, in hematological malignancies, and really is transforming our treatment landscape to prioritize not only clinical outcomes, but also prioritize patient convenience, patient's quality of life, patient experience with care, as well as accessibility, which is very important. How is it different from IV therapies? Traditional intravenous administration of nivolumab or other treatments really requires often for our patients to spend prolonged times in infusion chairs, overall spend a long time in clinic. Some patients need a portacath, which really places a lot of strain on our patients, both physical and emotional strain, especially for people who receive treatments every few weeks for a number of years. This cumulative, burden, I think, is very impactful and significant for our patients. So transitioning to a much more simplified subcutaneous formulation of nivolumab will allow our patients to have a much shorter injection time, ultimately have a shorter time in the clinic, potentially offering options for delivering treatment outside of infusion units. Maybe these injections can be administered directly in the clinic where the patient is seen. So skipping the additional step of having to check into the chemotherapy unit and having the treatment administered there. Potentially, we can envision a future where these treatments will be given in alternative healthcare settings, potentially in settings that are closer to where the patient lives, in primary care offices, or even in the home. So I think this has broad implications for access to care, especially in reducing healthcare disparities for patients who live far from treatment centers, patients who live in rural areas, as well as people who juggle additional workload problems, family problems, and sparing time from traveling to and from facilities, or the time that they spend in the clinic, is really meaningful.
So now starting to get into the CheckMate 67T trial that this approval is based off of, what was the design of this trial and really, you know, what kind of patients were enrolled?
The CheckMate 67T trial was a multi-center, open label, randomized trial that assessed the non-inferiority of subcutaneous nivolumab compared to intravenous nivolumab. It enrolled 495 patients with metastatic or advanced renal cell cancer that progressed after one or two lines of systemic therapy, but who have not had immunotherapies in the past. Patients also had a performance score, a Karnofsky performance score of 70 or higher. Patients were randomized 1-to-1 to receive either subcutaneous nivolumab, 1,200 milligrams of subcutaneous nivolumab formulated with hyaluronidase, recombinant human hyaluronidase, 20,000 units, every 4 weeks, or to receive nivolumab IV, 3 milligrams per kilogram every 2 weeks, until progression or unacceptable toxicity or consent withdrawal or completion of 2 years of therapy, which is pretty standard for clinical trials in immuno-oncology. The primary endpoint was really the non-inferiority in terms of exposure to subcutaneous nivolumab compared to intravenous nivolumab. There were two co-primary endpoints, PK endpoints, for non-inferiority, which was the time averaged concentration, serum concentration over the first 28 days or C average 28, as well as minimum serum concentration at steady state or C minimum. There was also a secondary endpoint, which was objective response rate compared between subcutaneous nivolumab and intravenous nivolumab. The trial met both the primary endpoint, non-inferiority PK endpoints in both the C average 28 as well as C minimum, and also met the secondary endpoint of overall response rate, which was 24% for the subcutaneous nivolumab and 19% or 18% for IV nivolumab. The secondary endpoint was evaluated by blinded central review.
So with all that in mind, you know, we can start to get into the safety profile of the subcutaneous delivery, but also, are there any different safety profiles from the intravenous delivery as opposed to subcutaneous?
That's a great question. And we have a clinical trial with subcutaneous nivolumab open at our institution. And I get this question from our patients all the time. And this trial really showed that the safety profile of subcutaneous nivolumab and IV nivolumab is very comparable. There were no new safety signals. The most common side effects in both arms were fatigue, musculoskeletal pain, rash, cough, what we would expect with intravenous nivolumab. They did see about an 8% rate of local injection reactions with subcutaneous nivolumab, which were all very mild, low grade, as well as transient. And again, this is very comparable with our experience here in the clinic.
How does this approval potentially open doors for other therapies to be delivered subcutaneously?
Great question. I think this approval of subcutaneous nivolumab really sets a precedence for development and adoption of more subcutaneous cancer-directed therapies, especially for solid tumors. It really shows that the feasibility of formulating highly effective IV therapies into much more patient-friendly, simple and convenient administration without compromising efficacy as well as safety. So I think it will open the door for more drugs to be formulated and delivered in much more patient-friendly ways, and to prioritize patient convenience, patient time, patient quality of life, as well as in addition to clinical outcomes. It really also, from a health system perspective, I think it highlights the need for development of drugs that allows us to be more efficient in delivering care. The number of cancer patients is increasing. It's estimated that by 2040, for instance, there will be 50% more new cancer diagnoses. Patients also live a lot longer because of developments in diagnostics as well as treatments, and they receive subsequent lines of treatment. So we really are outpaced in our ability to deliver treatment to patients, and we have to find ways of having therapies that allow us to be much more efficient. If we remove a lot of the resources that we use today for intravenous administration of many drugs, and we save those resources by treating more patients, by allowing our nurses to focus more on patients, I think the healthcare systems become stronger as well. So I feel this is a perfect balance between addressing a patient need in quality of life, in convenience and access, and also addressing a really healthcare need in giving and being able to provide therapies to more patients. I'm, you know, really excited about this new era in oncology. Honestly, I believe that a lot of these treatments will allow our patients a lot more flexibility. And for me, it is very important to be able to allow access to more patients, to these life-saving medicines for more patients. So having these patient-friendly ways of administering cancer therapies that potentially allows us to deliver these drugs closer to their communities or in their homes, for me, is a paradigm shift in oncology.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OnClive on Air, supported by Bristol-Myers Squibb. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates on oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. Enclave is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at Enclave. On Facebook, give us a like at Enclave and follow our Enclave page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of Enclave on Air, please also consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thank you again for listening to this episode of Enclave on Air.